Hey, welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Polillo. You can follow him on X at Polillo. No Josh today. He'll be back with us next week. But on today's episode, the runs are scarce, but the L's are abundant as Houston drops the series in Minnesota. The biggest headline of the series was Lance McCullers landing on the IL, but the more surprising update was just how wet water continues to be. And Houston heads into Chicago to face a struggling Cubs team. I wonder if they can sneak Breggie back home in their luggage. Speaking of baggage, Mark DeRosa says it's time for a reimagining in Houston. I'll get Charlie's reaction. Charlie, welcome in. Since there's no Josh, switch things up a little bit. I usually kind of set the agenda here, but I'm gonna let you decide. What do you want to talk about first? Pitching or hitting?
How about the weather? How about the return of the Comets next season? We're under 4 months to the Texans kicking off. Okay, avoided it long enough. You mentioned water is wet. Lather, rinse, repeat. It's bad to be bad. Even worse is to be bad and boring. And that's where the Astros are. It's going to wreck the summer here if it doesn't turn. The offense is just so pitiful, and Joe Espada can keep talking about we've lost our identity or we lose our identity. No, your identity is your offense is garbage. And for the younger crowd, Brandon, you're included in that, but I know you are aware of who Johnny Carson was.
Oh, of course.
The king of late night. And yep. He used to have a bit with the audience during his monologue where he'd start a story and kind of ask a rhetorical question. Also kind of used on Match Game, the game show. Little Johnny was so dumb. How dumb was he? Or is he the Astros offense, Brandon, is so bad.
How bad are they?
Well, here we go. Heading into a Wrigley Field after being worser and worsest against the less than dominant Twins. The Astros now 12 consecutive games have failed to top four runs even once, right? There's that general statistic, three runs or fewer. You're hardly ever going to win when that's the case. But once in a while, by accident, you should have a five-run game. Since that 10-0 win in Cincinnati 2-3 years ago, 12 consecutive games, updating the tally, 1-0-1-2-4-3-2-4-0, and then count it down in Minnesota, 3-2-1. Good news, I guess, is it wasn't a four-game series. Well, 12 in a row, four or fewer runs. So I went to the archives, nerding out. It was better than watching the 2026 Astros highlight film. 1963, their second year in existence, that team scored about 50% less often than this year's Mets is so far. The 60s, the most dominant era of pitching in baseball history. But the 1963 Colt 45s averaged 2.86 runs per game. These disasters are at 4.27 on the back of that good homestand to start the season. But 2.86 runs per game. The 63 Colt 45s had a stretch of 15 games in a row where they scored four or fewer runs. Over those 15 games, they scored a total of 11 runs. They were shut out in six of the last seven of them. So you think this offense is bad? Well, you've seen a lot of nothing, but not compared to that squad. So the other one I went and looked up, the nadir of the teardown, the 2013 Astros, 51-111. That team finished the year on a 15-game losing streak. The last 10 games, they scored four or fewer runs, their worst stretch of the season. So an Astros team that went 51-111, it was flat out trying to stink, never had a stretch as poor measured by not one time, by accident scoring five runs in a game, to the 12-in-a-row stretch the Astros lugged to Wrigley Field. And it's almost like a hantavirus spreading up and down the lineup at this point, Brandon. You know, Yordan's OPS in May is 694. after he was crushing the world in April, 1-for-11 in Minnesota. Isak Paredes, hey, hit the home run to win the game in the first inning in the middle game in Minnesota, but his OPS is 7-11. Okay, Jeremy Pena's working his way back, but his OPS is 638. Christian Walker, I don't think the trade calls were white hot on him. Well, forget that. Christian Walker's now 5 for his last 47. That's a 106 batting average over his last 13 games. OPS has plunged from over 1,000 to 819. The batting average was 325. Now it's 255, about his career norm. And then you have the bubble bursting on the guys who are pleasant surprises, not helping the team win a meaningful number of games. But Christian Vasquez has turned back into Christian Vasquez, his OPS plunging toward 700. Braden Shoemake, who's this guy? He's Braden Shoemake, 1 for his last 14, his OPS plunging by a couple of hundred points. So if you're looking for a silver lining, you better have like 20/10 vision where this offense is concerned, because I can't find one, Brandon. And as you know, I'm an eternal optimist.
You are an eternal optimist, and our commenters always point that out about you. You know, the thing that's unfortunate about this, as you're laying it out, is this narrative all season about how just injury ravaged this team is, and they are. There's no question about it. But when you look at the totality of what they've done on offense, or more importantly, what they haven't done, you know, we were discussing last episode whether they would even really feel the loss of Altuve, considering how anemic his numbers have been during the season. Yordan, as you touched on, was in God mode to start out the season, has cooled off in the month of May. Paredes, who they were hoping to get top dollar for in a trade, has really been giving you nothing. Myers went to the IL, but what do you really expect from Myers? It's really Correa that I think out of the losses, I mean, obviously they missed Pena. He's back. Losing Correa for the season just is absolutely a gut punch to a team. Was he setting the world on fire? No. But was he one of the best of this group? Yeah. You know, what's funny is, you know, you look at Dana Brown's was talking about, I think it was after the Imai deal. So we're not done, right? If they end up being sellers at the deadline, he's technically not wrong. But what do you do with this team at this point? Because you just have to hope it just has to turn around.
Right. Joey Loperfido is going to save the season. Right. Yainer Diaz sucked before he went down injured. He's going to come back and suddenly be 2023. Yainer Diaz, all roads seem to lead to nowhere. I mean, Jake Meyer's second game back, he's batting fifth in the lineup, supplanting Zach DiCenzo. You know, neither guy has any business batting fifth in a lineup, but who else is Joe Espada going to ink in there? Zach Cole? And for all the woes, the biggest disappointments to me in terms of going forward significance, that Bryce Matthews and Cam Smith continue to flop around like flounder in a canoe. Matthews 0 for 3, 3 strikeouts in the finale in Minnesota. Carries a batting average of 202 and an OPS of 609, as was the story with him in the minor leagues. And if you can't make good contact in the minor leagues, the odds are against you suddenly becoming Ichiro at the big league level. You can't strike out more than once every three official at-bats and be good unless you have awesome power and connect enough to take advantage of it. Bryce Matthews shows no inclination of being able to do that. Cam Smith, an infield hit, and okay, he pulled a single for a two-hit game. But Cam Smith, 160 his last 35 games, 132, 5 for his last 38. Negligible power. I don't care what his bat speed is. So the two guys, and unfortunately, we've been on this for a couple of years, just because you're the Astros' best prospects doesn't mean in the University of Prospects you're good, because the Astros farm system is so bad, right? The tallest little person in the room of the little person convention doesn't mean you're a giant. So, you know, you're saying, okay, here are building blocks going forward. Where? What? And we've discussed how at AAA, there is nothing. At AA, not much more. So, you know, then you get to, okay, if you decide to blow it up and Jim Crane says, I wasn't fibbing, I really believed it, but okay, our window's temporarily closed. What are you going to do? They cannot do what Jeff Luhnow did 15 years ago. You can't do that in today's game.
Yeah. We're going to get to that a little bit later too. And we're going to get to pitching next. But before we do that, why don't you give me a pitch for Fidelity One Mortgage?
Houston company with decades of proven quality. Greg Sheena is the man. Well, a man, but a co-owner of Fidelity One Mortgage for 36 years, originating loans throughout the state, homes and investment properties. For purchase transactions the rest of May, they're running a rate buster promotion where you, for your first full year, you get 1% off whatever your rate is. If it's 6.5, the first year you're paying 5.5 and so forth. It's an easy way to save thousands of dollars. How much, of course, pending the exact total of the loan. Improve your chances of an accepted offer by securing pre-approval. And when you do so with Fidelity One Mortgage, you're still free to rate shop, but you'll learn that they are extremely rate competitive. Whether buying, refinancing, or going into your home equity, Fidelity One Mortgage will get it done with you with a premium on customer service along the way. Mention me or SCS to Greg and get up to a bonus $600 credit at closing for the appraisal. Call Greg at Fidelity One Mortgage, 713-952-9276, 952-9276, NMLS 311-100.
So, Charlie, how many times have we seen it this season? Julio Rodriguez struggling, bust out against Houston. Cal Raleigh slumping, hits fine against Houston. Josh Bell, home run drought. Here comes Houston to the rescue. We previewed the series and we were curious about what was this turn in the order going to look like from this part of the rotation of these big question marks and the starters. Emi, McCullers, Burrows. Well, one of them doesn't even get to make his start because he lands on the IL instead. But, you know, Emi just looks the way he looks. We're five games into his tenure here, 8.31 ERA. Burrows, after 10 starts, is 2-6 with a 5.75 ERA. Whip at 1.53. 16 of his 36 runs have come with two outs. This guy just has trouble getting out of innings cleanly. Charlie, I don't even really know where to start with this, but I guess we'll save the McCullers stuff, but just the pitching staff just continue, especially this section of the pitching staff just continues to disappoint. What did you see?
Yeah. Emi's start in Minnesota, that there was almost some celebration that he wasn't worse than brutal. I mean, this is where it's at. You give up three runs and don't make it through five innings. Hey, there's progress. He didn't walk anybody. Three runs in 4 2/3. That's not good work against the Twins lineup that is no juggernaut. You know, if you're literally dying of thirst in the desert, and I guess all you have is a glass of your own bodily fluid, I mean, it doesn't taste like champagne, but that's what I felt when people talk, hey, Emi, oh, he attacked his zone. Look, that's what we're looking for. Give me a freaking break. Oh, by the way, making over $600,000 per start to go out and do that. Kudos to Jason Alexander, but that's like Brayden Shoemake. I mean, where's the real upside going forward? Jason Alexander's 33 years old. He had that nice stretch last season, but how much are you going to milk from that? Now, at least Peter Lambert, who I wouldn't buy stock on, but he has stuff, whereas Alexander just kind of has to finesse his way through. But Lambert, at 28, 29 years old, is suddenly he going to really blossom into a number two, number three level starter? Burrows continues to confound, as we talked about one of the last couple episodes, maybe both. Yeah, he gets you through six innings, giving up four runs, as if that's any good. Mm-hmm. So there's just, hey, Hunter Brown's going to go throw a rehab outing this weekend. But if the house is burned to the ground by the time he gets back, it doesn't matter how big his fire hose is.
It was funny, when we were previewing this, I was talking about how McCullers is this roulette wheel of bad game, and sometimes it lands on a good game. I forgot about the more obvious one, which is he lands on the IL, which is something that's happened a lot in his career. And I've gone on and on about how much I'm a fan of McCullers, so I'm not going to belabor the point here. I am a fan of McCullers. I hate that he's on the IL. It sucks. But here we are again. And the reality is, I mean, look, the only reason we're going through this right now is because his contract situation. Give me your thoughts on where it stands from your perspective on Lance.
It should be over. I mean, if you're trying to salvage this season and he's healthy in 2 months, if it's not another season-ending procedure, well, what qualitatively makes you say, yeah, if you can only batten down the hatches until McCullers gets back? Obviously, he's a zero factor beyond this season. And it again ties to the farm is so fallow. They don't have a knocking on the door starting pitching prospect at AAA. They have a kid by the name of Miguel Ulloa, 23 years of age. But you won't believe this with an Astros pitcher or Astros pitching prospect. He's really wild. So he's not made it to the major leagues yet because he just walks five guys every nine innings. But call him up if the season's a lost cause. Give him some OJT and see if he can keep his head somewhere near the water. Whereas what's the point at this point with McCullers? I appreciate the gameness, not just wanting to say, ow, I'm hurt, shut me down, let me collect my last $17 million and I'm out of here. But if he's pitching through pain, he pitches lousily more often than not, why go on with it? So there'll be a lot of what ifs to Lance McCullers' career. Those 24 straight curveballs, you wonder how that factored in to all his arm issues, but it also ensconced his Astros legacy, closing down the Yankees and ALCS Game 7 in 2017. But yeah, there could have been so much more, but that's all moot.
Look, we aren't physicians. We're not going to stay on this too long, but I do want to ask, given his history, given the state of everything that's happened, he's pitching through pain here. And I'm not saying, look, he's not a prospect, you know, and he's just got 1 year left on the deal. So it's not like they're risking something big here. But I don't know. I take a step back and I look at the state of this team and the state it's been the past two seasons where they've just had a just deluge of injuries that they've had to navigate here. I know correlation is not causation, but at some point, does this start pointing back at the Astros' health and wellness, keeping their guys healthy and on the field?
Natural to wonder about. And when your lawn is just an absolute mess, you're not worried about the crabgrass and dandelions up the street. But look at the volume of pitchers the Dodgers have on the injured list currently and that they've had in recent years. The Toronto Blue Jays presently. Oh, by the way, those are the two teams that played in the World Series last year. And they have pitchers down left and right. And it's all across baseball. I think it's specifically fair in the Astros case. A couple of cases of where, hey, were guys brought back too soon. Dana Brown opined that on Javier last year. But that they've had so many guys break down, it's just all over the sport. So if the Astros medical staff, training staff is culpable, I think it's an industry-wide epidemic.
There's a MLB clip that's floating around social media, and this ties back to what we were talking about a little earlier from the MLB Central show. And they're debating what Houston should do. Mark DeRosa says Houston would be wise to realize basically who they are and who they aren't, to not get lulled by the state of the division. We'll roll that.
And then you're looking at the Houston Astros, and I'm saying to myself, if they did a reimagining, they have big time star type players. They could redo this thing, the two or three trades, and bring in a completely new all.
You could put deals together
with Yordan Alvarez. You don't have to lose. You can reimagine this and be.
Yeah, I think that is.
Where are you going 5 years from? Like, where's it going?
Okay, so his rationale is the team's not going to extend Pena, probably. That's true. And that Yordan would get them a load of in return. That's also true. I don't know how you are reimagining this team with Yordan not on it, because I mean that the case is supposedly that they're not tearing it down to the studs, but that really does sound, if you're giving away your best offensive hitter, that certainly sounds like you're tearing it down to the studs. What did you think of DeRosa's reimagining idea for what Houston should do?
I get the point, but much more easily said than done. A couple of points. Yordan is the guy, right? Juan Soto brought back to the Washington Nationals, three guys who turned out to be all-stars. At least one time. James Wood, A.J. Abrams still there. Mackenzie Gore, who they traded last offseason to the Rangers. But they got a serious return. And then when the Padres traded Soto to the Yankees, they got Michael King, a legit frontline starter. Randy Vasquez, who's been very good for the Padres so far this year. Multiple good pieces if you identify the right players and make the trade. And because Yordan signed for two more years, and in MLB economics, under $20 million per year, what he counts toward the tax computation, that is dirt cheap. Now, obviously, you're giving up on the season. Well, if the ship's already sunk, what is it going to be? Sunker? If you trade Yordan? So that's the critical internal question. You're not going to command the moon and stars for Jeremy Pena. I mean, he's had one season where he's been a good offensive player. That was about three quarters of a season. He turns 29 years old in September. He's a year away from free agent. No one thinks, well, if Jeremy Pena continues to develop, he could be Bobby Witt Jr. No. Sure, see what's out there, because I have no interest in paying Jeremy Pena $25 million per year when he's at 30, if that's what he and his team are looking for in a long-term deal. But you need major league players, right? If you're committing to a teardown 4 or 5 years. And here's a couple of other key points for those who are saying, you know, sell off everything that's not tied down. You cannot trade for draft picks. So you can't trade Yordan for two prospects and four number one draft picks. All that can be traded in the draft pick game, unless it changes in the CBA, whenever that gets done, compensatory picks added after the first round, competitive balance picks that are in the 30s. So you cannot trade for, in NBA terms, high lottery picks, or, you know, in the NFL, ooh, a top five pick in the draft. You cannot do it. And if you want to tank and, all right, like the Astros did 2011, 2012, 2013, and get the first pick, second pick, and first pick in three consecutive drafts. Nope, not anymore. A lottery sets the first six picks. And all 18 teams that don't make the playoffs are in the lottery. Now, if you're the worst team in baseball, one of the three worst teams in baseball, you get a 16.5% chance at the number one pick. But you could be fifth or sixth. And oh, by the way, the Astros are ineligible to have a top six pick in consecutive drafts because they're a non-revenue receiving team. So I don't know what the strategy to get really good sustainably is again, Brandon, other than they need to start drafting better and developing better. But tanking to the bottom for a Luno-esque re-rise to the top, you can't do it. You cannot do it the way the sport is structured now.
Yeah, I don't really even know. You know, he's talking about not tearing it down to the studs. He's talking about a reimagining, which, you know, I guess is a cute way of saying just trade one or two guys. But the problem is what you said is, like, if you trade Yordan, what's there? Because we've already established, you know, Pena's likely gone. You've got a shell of what Altuve is still left on this team, whatever Correa's got left in the tank. And then it's just a bunch of question marks after that, you know. It's easy to say, it's easy to throw out words like that and pontificate about it, but it's a lot harder in practice because You got to land the prospects, and you got the prospects have to have names to them, and then they have to work out. And it's easy to say it in the abstract, but like when it has to get it put into practice and you're the one who's being held account to, what did I get back for Yordan Alvarez? The difficulty level is a lot higher there. I think the more interesting question is, he says, where is this team going? Where, you know, where's this headed? Where will they be in 5 years? I think that's a good question. I think just as importantly is, who's going to be making the decisions 5 years from now? Now, Houston heads into Chi-Town to face the Cubs. They are in a bit of a skid. They've lost 5 straight, 9 out of their last 11. Their pitching has not been good, but better than, well, we know. What are you looking for out of this series?
Well, Jim Crane can be at least thinking, at least I'm not stuck with Bregman's contract or Tucker's contract. Alex Bregman, now we know he had his share of slow starts with the Astros, but this is year one of 5 years, $175 million. He's sub 700 OPS. You mentioned the Cubs have hit the skids. Those Milwaukee Brewers always figure out how to put it together. Player development, drafting, and good work internationally, right? That needs to be the Astros model to build it back up. 3 at the Cubs and then 4 at the Rangers. If the Astros are to have a 500 road trip, they need to win 4 of 7. Not liking their chances there. And then big picture, you know, as bad as the division is, at 20-31, you know, if 85 wins would get this division or the last wild card, to get there, the Astros have to play what over a full season would be 97-win baseball the rest of the way, a 602 winning percentage. Who in the hell thinks they're capable of playing that over 110 games? Can they peel off a 5-out-of-6 stretch, an 8-out-of-11 stretch? Yeah, in the shorter run, that's doable. But over 4 months to play 600 baseball with this team's starting rotation and a lineup that presently is at least as bad as the rotation, that window open credo is going to be stretched beyond credulity here.
It is. And we talked about before we were recording here, the Astros kind of testing the elasticity of their fans' interests. The team is certainly stress testing the elasticity of their ability to stay within contention within a very bad division. We'll cut it there since we're running long. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, please give us a 5-star rating while you're here. For Charlie, I'm Brandon saying so long. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.